Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And as always, we got Mr. KC Clapp.
Hello, everyone. It's me, KC Clapp. I'm here with Alex Croson.
Wow.
Me, Alex Croson.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. KC, we have some exciting Fungal Associate news.
Yes, we do.
Which is that Halloween just happened.
It just happened.
And we got a notification on Instagram that somebody dressed up as KC Clapp and Alex Croson.
Not only
right.
One partnership,
mm-hmm.
Two different groups of pairs, or rather two different pairs. I can't believe this. What does that mean, Alex?
I don't know, but it was really surreal.
Okay,
so
who
have to shout out. I have their handles, Yuffie Delight, who did a great job with either. I'm sorry if they're not your partner, but there's another person.
Yeah, we'll call them their podcast co-host.
Yes, Yuffie said that the Alex Croson to my KC Clapp. They did a great job. This other person who dressed up as me looks so much like me, even like a younger me, right? Even in face.
Incredible.
I think they did like a face off thing.
Yeah, the other person got like a little bit of mustache makeup.
Yes, so that was one couple, and the other couple, N Butts, excuse my French, 11, who dressed up as you and I.
I love that.
Just stunning.
I can't believe
you guys did a great job. These are so fun and so exciting. They even posed like us, Casey, with a cone like this.
I'm beyond, like, I don't know. I feel like that means we've truly made it, Alex.
Yeah.
We're now not only public figures, but we're public figures to be imitated.
Next thing, the next sort of big get would be that if you and I were like a popular like pinata at like quinceañeras.
Oh, that's going to be the next one. You're right. That is the obvious, very clear step two from where we're at.
Mexico just hates us for some reason and wants to beat the shit out of us.
It's because we brought up the idea that their state national tree is an actual shrub.
Right. But we agree with Mexico.
We do. We agree with Mexico on this. Yeah. So I think that's fair. So they should be like, hey, but you guys should never have brought that up.
But shout out to those people. They did a fantastic job.
Incredible. Thank you so much. I think we're beyond flattered.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's insane.
I was stunned. Well, congratulations, everyone.
Yes.
We did it.
Truly, congratulations. Together, we all came out. We all came out for Halloween.
Casey, the spooky season is over.
It's true. No more pumpkins.
That's right.
No more pumpkin spices.
You can still have pumpkin spice. No. What about Thanksgiving?
No, it's over.
Pumpkin pie?
Nope. It's done.
Okay.
No more leaves. They're done.
Right, yeah.
They've changed the colors, and if they haven't changed colors, close your eyes.
Don't pay attention to them.
Don't look at them. Don't talk about them. Don't tweet about them. X about them either.
But one thing, no Tumblr posts.
Nope.
But one thing that will never change is that today we are going to talk about a tree.
That is true. That is timeless.
And today we are popping bottles, Casey.
Yes, we are.
Because we are talking about the cork oak.
That's right, Alex.
Quercus.
Suber, which I'm so happy that you wondered, because that this is, I we have a little etymology.
Oh, lesson. Exciting!
Yes, and just as a little bonus, if you stay till the end of this episode, I'll tell you why we're popping corks.
Oh my gosh!
It's more than just a great reason to talk about this tree.
Wonderful. Well, we got to do so, Casey.
Got to do what?
Talk about all those things.
Oh yeah, yeah.
After a break,
let's do that now.
Okay, and go. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man, I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
It sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my god.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah,
it was $5 or something.
Yeah,
and they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there, and then picked up a pair of sunglasses, and it said it was $25, and I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face, and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the cork oak.
That's right. Now, Alex, this is fun. So we'll just let's just jump into this quick little etymology here.
Okay.
Because this is called the cork oak, and it's called the cork oak because it creates cork.
Yes. So this is like a one for one, right?
Yes.
Like the cork that grows inside the cork oak is the exact same cork that we use to pin evidence of who the serial killer is.
Exactly.
All over our walls.
Correct. And draw strings between the pins.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. It's also the same cork that you would have inside a cricket bat.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Specifically cricket.
Yes. Yes. I learned this. Specifically cricket
Interesting.
Bats.
Okay.
Also, it's the same cork that you would have inside, rather not inside, but it would make the sole of your sandal.
Yeah, sure.
It's also the same kind of cork that you would have in...
This is now the podcast.
A bottle. Yeah.
Just naming...
What kind of cork?
Welcome to Cork Talk.
Here we go. We're going to talk about cork and cork-related topics. I'm your
Mainly
host.
Mainly corks.
Corky clap.
And I'm Alex Corkson.
We could do that. That'd be great. So now let's talk about cork, Alex, because cork comes from Dutch and Low German, K-O-R-K, cork, which comes from Spanish, alcorque, which literally means cork-soled sandal.
Oh, wow.
Then comes from Arabic, all, the, and probably in a Spanish... Arabic origin, because did you know that Spanish and Arabic are like very uniquely tied together?
Of course I knew this.
I know you did. For those of you who didn't, it's because the Arabs came across northern Africa at like one of the height of their kind of empire spreading after the Romans, and like in the kind of the Arab when everyone was in the Dark Ages, the Arabs were like doing crazy stuff.
In their enlightened period.
Exactly, which is why everyone's like, the Dark Period is such a Eurocentric thing.
Yes.
They had come over and gone up into Spain from Africa.
Ah, yes.
The Moors.
Yes.
And so the languages have a lot in common.
Yeah, okay.
Same thing with Portuguese. If you listen to it, it actually sounds a lot like Arabic too.
Mm.
So cork, Q-U-R-Q or Q-O-R-Q, is based on the Latin quercus, which means oak. So, cork comes from quercus, which is oak tree, but it's also suber, which was Latin for the tree that is the cork tree.
So, it is the cork, oak, oak cork.
Yes.
Like you said.
Yes, exactly.
But I think I edited that out.
Oh, great job. Thank you, Alex. Yeah, that was a mess.
I mean, no, this was my idea.
But anyway, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, don't you think? Like,
yeah, there's this sort of like circular. You're doing sort of a figure eight with your hands. You know?
Like a positive feedback loop. You know?
Yeah. It is sort of like a current of electricity that's just sort of like feeding in on itself.
Yeah.
I love etymology that's like that ends in just like a whirlpool. Like you can't really tell where it begins and where it ends.
Yes, yeah, it's totally.
And everything feeds into the other thing, which feeds back into that thing.
It's amazing.
That's very interesting, Casey.
It makes it feel like it's a real, really good name.
You know?
That's what
there
I
was some thought and history put into this name.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and now we're just like Cork Oak, huh? That's funny.
Anyway, give me the wine.
But I did purport that Cork Quercus was related.
Yes. Oh, you did.
Yes. Which
good
they
job.
Are, right?
Yes, they are.
But also kind of there's other reasonings too.
Yeah, but it's you can draw a pretty easy line, it looks like.
Yeah.
But in the etymology that I found, it did say probably.
Oh,
so
sure.
So there is a little bit of stretch from the Latin to the Arabic back over and across up to the Spanish, up to the German, up to the English.
Interesting.
So, but honestly, over a couple thousand years and four, five, six different languages over those times, you can imagine where you could be like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You can't really 100% say. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
It'd be quite a project, I feel like.
I think it would be. But you know what? We got our best people on it.
That's right. Casey Clapp and Alex Rosen. Casey, let's imagine as we do every episode that you and I are in the Mediterranean.
Let's
proper.
Do it.
And we come across some of these beautiful cork oaks.
Oh, I'm so excited.
For our sandals, let's ID this tree.
Let's ID this tree, Alex. So specifically, we would be walking around if one of two different places, most likely. If we are in Spain, it's called a dehesa.
Dehesa.
Dehesa. Hmm. If we are in, or rather, I'm sorry, the Spanish pronunciation would be dehesa.
What is that?
That is the term for the woodlands that these trees are managed in and for.
Oh.
So they look like the same kind of thing you'd expect in Northern California, where there's just oak trees that are not very tall. They're not like giantly super dense, but they just kind of have these boom, 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 wide open oak savanna-like areas.
Cool.
With these big trees, but they don't get very tall. They maybe get 70, 80 feet tall max. Like that's max. They stay usually around 50 or 60 on average.
Hmm.
And they grow up and they have these big wide canopies that come outwards. So they create these like short little stubby evergreen oak trees, very much like, I mean, spitting image of the oak trees of California.
Oh.
Which is why we call that section of California, Southern Oregon, a Mediterranean climate.
Right.
Same exact thing. Literally the same exact thing.
So kind of a big, short, sprawling oak.
Yes, exactly.
I'm also reminded of live oak.
It is, yeah. It's kind of like live oak, except it doesn't get as tall as wide. It's kind of like a live oak that's been like shrunk down.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like a little smaller. And they grow in these open woodlands. If we are in Portugal, we would call these...
Wow, they don't even have a name for it. You just silence.
They don't. No one knows.
no one knows what to call them.
Yeah, they just are like, we don't have a word for this. They're called a Montaro.
Montaro.
Montaro. And I named those two places because Spain and Portugal are the two biggest producers of cork.
Okay.
Because this is the habitat where the cork oak grows in these big woodland areas.
Neat.
Along with the holm oak and the Iberian oak and the maritime pine, Italian stone pine. But you can find them growing in North Africa also. So this sort of southwestern Europe, northeastern Africa is their most populous region. And then as you go around the Mediterranean, just kind of encircling it, they grow kind of in the drier but still kind of humid and moist areas that get nice amounts of rain right around the ring of the Mediterranean.
Interesting, Casey. I'm tempted to say, hey, let's save the bark for last.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Definitely. So maybe we should talk about leaves.
The leaves, Alex. Evergreen oak. A beautiful
love
evergreen
it.
Oak.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, if you're in the United States, probably in the northeastern United States, many people think that oaks are just big, gigantic deciduous trees.
Sure.
They are not.
Yes, there are evergreen oaks.
Exactly. I think, actually, I would probably wager that majority of oak species are, in fact, small, shrubby, very scrubby evergreen species.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. Because there's a lot. A lot of them actually stay as shrubs. Some of them grow as shrubs for, like, the first several years of their lives and then just, like, out of nowhere send up giant shoots. It's kind of like they're building up a big root system, and then they come up, and then they grow up and out. They don't get very tall. They're very small, medium-sized trees.
Yeah.
This is the same for the oaks in the southwestern United States, as well as all these oaks down in the south of Europe and North Africa. But they grow these leaves on these very furry, furry shoots. And the leaves are kind of cupped a little bit. And on the edge of each one of their veins are little points. So they kind of look like a holly leaf in that regard.
I will say this leaf, for not being what I consider to be a traditional oak leaf, is quite comely.
They are. They're very lovely. I adore that term, comely. I think that is...
I hope I'm using it right.
I think you are, but it's kind of... You know what? Let's not look it up just to be sure. And if someone else is like, actually, you're using it completely wrong.
That's okay.
That's just like your perspective, man.
You try talking on a microphone for 2 hours every day. Yeah, they're a decent looking leaf.
Yeah, and they're very pubescent underneath, which I do like. So if you have the if you flip one over compared to the top, they're very contrasting with this light pubescence versus this kind of green. It's not a shiny green. It's kind of a dull light green on top.
Mm-hmm.
This white kind of pubescent underside, which I should note. The pubescence on the twigs, the pubescence on the leaves, that is all related to its dry Mediterranean habitat.
Hmm.
So it is adapted to these warm, dry conditions. And a lot of times, any plants that have these little pubescence along the base of their leaves, it's them making a teeny tiny microclimate underneath those little hairs that help keep it just a little bit cooler.
Ah.
Very, very common in different plants in these dry areas.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of saw it as like moisture wicking or something.
No, it actually kind of keeps moisture there.
Well, there you go. Well, let's talk acorn.
Oh, Alex, have you looked him up?
What a dandy little guy.
Aren't they just the cutest little things?
I love them, Case.
I think they're adorable. They cover, they're these little caps with these long acorns that are very pointed that come out, and they're like, I don't know, maybe the cap covers a quarter or a third of the whole acorn itself, but they're just so quintessential. They're just adorable. They're a little bit more elongated than what I think a lot of people are used to, but like if you're in Northern California, that is what an oak acorn looks like.
Oh, okay.
Like they're just these long, skinny little things that pop out.
The caps are also... they're not hairs, but they're like these little tendrils that pop out.
And those tendrils actually are only when they're young. As they age, they kind of become these little nubs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I
also like a mop head. I'm going to call it like a mop head.
Yes, it is. It's similar. But what's curious, Alex, is I looked this up and the like botanical drawings do not show those long tendrils.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure if it's just a very young one that is kind of growing and then those little mop heads kind of just like suck down and then just kind of have their tips point out or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
But I don't think that is a 100% thing. There's another oak tree. It's called the Quercus serrata. Or no, cerulata. And it is the sawtooth oak.
Mm-hmm.
And it has like a super mop head acorn cap.
Interesting.
Like it's wild. So I'm not sure if... I don't want to say 100% one way or the other, which is why I'm a little waffly right now, because I think that you can find them both depending on the amount of maturity of that acorn. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. I love when that happens.
It's one of those things that we've talked about, trees that have like, I'll be like, oh yeah, it has orange bark. And you're like, not really.
Kind of.
And I'm looking at like a young... like a sapling of it, you know, it's like one of those things that they'll grow out of it. It's just a phase.
Exactly. It's just a phase. It's going to be fine. just don't worry about it. Just lead them along the right path and they'll get through it.
Well, Casey, we've come to the crown jewel of this tree.
Haven't we?
It's namesake after
it
all.
It is. It's name's namesake.
Which is the bark, the oak bark.
Mm.
Can I say, I'm looking at a few photos of cork oaks that have been harvested for their bark.
Yeah. Aren't they weird?
I'm reminded of the banner of the Boltons in Game of Thrones, the flayed man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
A little dark, but...
This is the flayed oak. Oh, my God.
The flayed oak, yeah.
Wow. That is, like, so accurate. You nailed it. It is exactly right. However, we should note that the bark of this tree is that outer section.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, what they are doing is harvesting the bark. But let's take one step back first.
Okay.
The bark is cork. The thing that you are thinking in your brain right now, you mean that kind of cork? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean exactly that.
But not the very outer layer, right? Like the thing we see if we look at a cork oak and we look at the bark.
Yeah.
It's going to look like tree bark.
No.
It's going to look like cork?
It's going to look like cork because it kind of splits and kind of curls in those ridges, in the furrows kind of between the split.
Uh-huh.
Just like you see any other big oak tree growing out, and it has these big kind of furrowy dark bark with these individual furrows between.
Yeah.
Those are, it's just essentially a thick bark that is made of this very specific substance called suberin. And suberin is a fire-resistant, water-resistant chemical polymer inside the bark. It's in almost every single tree, which is why we call that section the bark cambium that grows the bark in a tree. We call it the cork cambium because it is producing this substance that we call cork in the titular cork oak.
Sure.
So the bark itself, you can see that it looks just like cork.
Yeah, it's
you can
wild.
Feel it and you're like, this feels rubbery and corky. It just so happens this tree has produced way more than most other trees as an adaptation, again, to fire, because it's big and thick and fire resistant. So fire just kind of goes along it. The tree, even if it loses its branches and some twigs, it just regrows because the main kind of column stays alive underneath the insulation that is the cork oak bark.
The cork is wild.
Yeah.
The cork is off the chain, man.
It's so beautiful. Alex, have you seen one of these trees in person?
Not IRL, no.
Oh, I literally passed one on my way to your house.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I'm looking at a photo of a man harvesting some bark.
Yeah.
And it looks like he scored the bark to make it nice and easy. And it looks he's opening a door.
Yeah.
On the side of the tree.
It's like
when you put grass down on a lawn.
Oh, like sod.
Like sod. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's exactly what it looks like.
It's wild.
So what they've done is they let these trees grow up, and this is kind of an important part of this. So what it is the bark of the tree. It's made of this certain substance where you can imagine the tree, for whatever reason, just started to just put out so much more suberin than any other tree. And that was an adaptive strategy that ended up saying, hey, this is actually really good for me withstanding fires. So it grows and grows and grows. It gets really big. As it grows, just like any other thick barked tree, the bark gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So what they've done in this flayed man tree is I had to watch a couple of videos, which are so interesting. These people are some of the most skilled people I've ever met in my life.
Wow.
Because I guess I technically haven't, quote, met them.
Spiritually.
But we're in the internet age, right?
Yeah.
So you're familiar, Alex, with the cambium layer of a tree, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. No further questions.
I see the judge isn't the one asking the questions.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm just a lawyer over here. Don't worry about it. So the cambium is that layer of living cells underneath the bark outside the wood.
Yeah.
That is the vascular system of the tree, right?
Yes, between the bark and the tree.
Correct.
The wood.
The wood, yeah. So if you cut into that and you take away all of the bark and you will kill that cambium layer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll dry out and it won't be able to function, and the tree above it will die because it's not getting any water, and space below it will probably die, or at least significantly be hindered, because it's not getting any of the photosynthate
yeah.
It's going down.
Yeah.
So that's called girdling a tree. Very, very quick and easy way to kill a tree. It's essentially cutting its head off, but you just go around the outside.
Damn.
So these people have developed a technique to cut into the bark and pull it off just down to the essentially closest layer to the cambium.
Wow.
Without actually going any further and killing the tree.
Damn.
So everyone has had this
surgical.
It is like mind-blowingly surgical, but they're doing it on like trees that are a meter thick.
Wow.
This is the interesting thing. They go and harvest these trees on a rotation of about every 9 to 12 years. The tree's planted, it grows up to about 25 years old, then they harvest it and they call that the virgin initial cut. Hmm. And that's very low quality cork, oak. Cork. Nice. So that's low quality because the tree is still young. It's also a small diameter. So at that small diameter at 25 inches, when you take that bark and you put your fingers together in like a cylinder, and then you keep your thumbs together, but then you flatten out your hands, then you can't do it 100%. But that is what they're doing with all of these, all the cork that they pull off, all that bark.
Hmm.
So they take it out and they put it in a press, like a cement press, and they leave them there for a couple months to let them like dry, and they also like boil them to get any maladies out and things like that. And then they flatten them out. They essentially get steam flattened.
Wow.
But that is of lower quality because the bark isn't as thick. And when you flatten it out, you're essentially taking something that was grown as a circle and making it flat.
Sure.
And it just doesn't really hold together. It breaks apart a lot. And yeah, there's a lot more gaps that you can kind of find. So air gets into whatever it is you're trying to cork.
So that's virginal cork.
Yes. Call that virgin cork.
Okay.
So then 9 to 12 years later, as the tree grows in diameter, just like the earth, once you get to a gigantic diameter,
mm-hmm,
the circle, the outer side of the circle, is essentially approaching flat.
Oh.
So the bigger the tree.
You heard it here first. Casey's a flat earther.
I'm a flat earther. Okay, you guys, you can admit that at least the earth is approaching flat.
I see, Casey. So it's the circle that is the diameter, excuse me, the circumference of the tree trunk.
Yes.
Is so big that one section of it is almost flat.
Exactly.
Making it much easier to go through this flattening process.
Precisely.
So where it doesn't break and become brittle.
Yes. And then you get a higher quality material.
That good cork.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then this is the best part. So it's like a sheet almost. Like maybe it's about an inch or so thick. And they take that sheet, they flatten it out,
uh-huh,
and then they cut it on a bandsaw. And then they lay those bits down, and they go through it. Essentially, if it's on the tree, they are cutting into it vertically. So longitudinally, if you take those sheets.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Take those sheets, you flatten them out, then they're going down through those sheets, and that's how they make the corks.
It's like cutting a hoagie roll for a sandwich.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then you're going sideways through the hoagie roll down the length of it.
Yes.
To get the hoagie corks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. A nice,
good
nice
Italian
hoagie cork.
Sub.
Yeah, I get a hoagie cork every time I eat a Philly cheesesteak.
I love the idea of you being like a one-liner guy, but yeah, they never quite land.
I'm just so
they
bad.
Just like take too long.
What is he going to say? Oh, that was funny. Man, if he just had better timing, that would have been really funny.
Hey, anyway. Casey, what's the difference between a good joke and a bad joke? Timing.
That was good.
That's really interesting, Case.
Yeah, it's a very interesting process.
I mean, it's almost like, I feel like I don't mean to disparage the talents of these cork harvesters.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I could have come up with that. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Like it's a very straightforward process. And that's not to say anything about like the technical skill it takes.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is very much like if I were tasked to harvest oak from this tree or a cork from this tree.
Yeah.
I would probably come up with something kind of similar.
Yeah. No, it is a very intuitive process.
Yes.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
But I think you're exactly right. I know you're right because I've watched the videos. It's the skill to execute that intuitive process because you can't go too deep or else you kill the tree.
Right.
If you kill the tree, you have killed your like livelihood.
It's like surgically removing like a pork loin without killing the pig. It's kind of wild.
I think it's actually more akin to shearing a sheep as opposed to skinning a sheep.
Ooh.
You skin the sheep's dead. You shear it, it'll grow back and you can keep shearing it over and over.
If you're precise enough, you can remove the skin without harming the animal.
Trust me, I do it all the time. The animals don't complain at all.
And then from there, Casey, what? They sell to, is this an industrialized process? Like, are there orchards and orchards and orchards? Casey is aghast.
My God.
Okay, tell
there
me.
Are, so it is a $1 billion industry.
Are you kidding?
No, more than
for
billion.
Cork?
15 billion cork stoppers made every year to supply the international market. And this, I believe, was written in 2001.
I was thinking, what could be popular enough to make an entire industry out of this one material? And of course, it's wine.
I was going to say, did you come up with anything? Wine,
it's wine,
champagne,
I forgot. Yeah, of course.
And all the other things that we talked about, all those other products.
Sure. I'm sure the sandal market is not quite as hot as
it's
the wine.
Yeah, it's not quite there yet. Yeah,
the wine market.
You know, but we're still building that up.
And all comes from this one species, huh?
Literally.
Okay.
There are no other species that I'm aware of that we use for natural cork.
And it's not, it's, is it this thing where, you know, I'm thinking of like the Japanese, the Japanese cherry, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like a million different varieties. So whatever ails you, you can find a cherry that's good for you. Is it like they've bred these to have extra thick cork?
No.
It's just natural.
It's just natural.
This is as close to like a real, like, sustainable natural practice.
I'm so happy, Alex, that you said that.
Wow.
And everyone, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, I did not prompt him to
no.
do this. There's no sign being like, say the word sustainable practice, Alex. No, this is, you are 100% right, because this tree is adapted to growing down in these lands. They're arid lands. They're like Northern California. So if we were to transform them into something else, then we are throwing the whole habitat out of whack.
Yeah.
If we cut all the trees down and we just graze it, turn it into a big farm, then we're no longer having the different animals that used to live there. You're not supporting the different people because you have one giant rancher who's running one giant ranch for one animal, you know?
Mm.
It's the American way that we do things.
Sure.
We will industrialize in one way for one thing. And then we will throw everything so completely out of balance that we have to keep on adding the other things in to bring it back into balance. But we're not really. We're just holding off the tide of pests that are coming in.
The factory farm mentality.
Exactly. So here in these two places that that I talked to you about, the Dehesas and Montato, they are these two like historic cultural landscapes that are basically protected.
Good.
And I say basically because the trees, at least in Portugal, are absolutely protected. You can't cut one of these trees down without permission from like the Department of Agriculture.
Oh, I'm reminded of sandalwood, Casey.
It's exactly the same thing because this is such a huge part of their economy.
Yeah.
They are the only places. They make something like 70 or 80% of all of the cork in every bottle in every part of the world.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a huge, huge amount. And they work these lands in a way that is so unique, but so like very dumbly obvious.
Mm.
So real back in the Roman times, they really started to like
here
put this
go.
Together. Anyway, so Caesar came in.
Casey found a way.
Actually, someone else did. I'm just a messenger here. Okay, just a messenger.
Much like Hermes.
Interesting.
Wrong era, sorry.
So they, back then, the Romans created this insane amount of, the best way to put it is just enterprise. So they were making stuff and they needed bottle toppers to put into their bottles of wine and other things. They didn't have very much glass though. Glass was probably one of the highest, fanciest, expensive things you could ever get.
Wow.
But they did make a lot of stuff out of different kinds of ceramic processes.
Sure, clay and...
Yeah, exactly. We're still finding those pots all over the place.
That's right.
So they found that you could take this cork stopper and you could put it on top and it would keep out water, it would keep out air, but it would let in just the right amount of air through the lenticular channels.
Wow.
You know what that comes from?
Lenticel?
Exactly.
Yeah, gas exchange.
That's exactly it. But it's just the right amount in high quality cork that lets in just this perfect amount to keep the process of fermentation and, you know, aging, like working nicely,
yeah,
but not enough to turn it into acid.
Wow.
So it's this really interesting, like perfect material if it's high quality. Low quality cork tends to not do that, again, for the reasons we talked about. Mm. Higher quality cork does it fantastically.
Wonderful.
So after the Romans kind of petered out, let's say, glass didn't really come back onto the scene until like the 1600s or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So then this whole process, this is what I read.
No middle-aged glass out there?
I don't think there was.
In churches?
Yeah, I maybe in churches. So there would be like, again, this fine, high-class stuff that you could buy.
High glass.
It wasn't, very high glass. Yeah, that was, quiet.
Sorry, that wasn't worth it.
But there's just not a lot of, there wasn't a lot out there for the plebeians, right? Sure. So what they ended up doing is revitalizing this use, and they have industrialized it in a traditional, sustainable way.
Mm.
So cork, from what I read, actually, I think I saw this on a Business Insider video, in case you're interested. They said that the cork oak tree has been protected in Portugal since the 6th century.
Oh my God.
Like, but back then it was like, you know, you had your royal people being like, royal decree, thou shalt not cut down this tree or else we'll cut your heads off.
In the king's forest.
Exactly. The king's forest was everywhere.
Right.
So there ended up becoming this unique balance that people developed. They are managing this land, not intensively, but very intensively.
Hmm.
So it's not managed intensively as in they do every little teeny tiny thing.
Sure.
It's just, they don't leave it alone. Nothing is there strictly by accident.
Yeah.
So they will plant new trees when old ones have to be cut down or die. Those trees grow up and they protect them from animals because they have animals, livestock out here all the time. They have pigs that eat the acorns and fatten them up for harvesting. And they have this very fancy Spanish and Iberian Peninsula meat that you get, ham. They have
Iberian pork.
Yes, exactly. You've
world
heard of
famous, of course.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I should have known you would know this, Alex.
Oh yeah.
Well,
I'm a big fan.
This is where it comes from. They fatten it up off the acorns of this and all the other oak trees that are kind of in these oak woodlands.
Mm.
Then they have cattle that graze on the grasses underneath the oak woodland. They have sheep that also graze, and then shear the sheep, and now they have clothes that they're making.
Wow.
Because they have left all of these native trees to grow in this woodland area, there are native insects. And of course, famously, oak trees are very good habitat for insects, specifically arthropods and little worms. That brings in birds. Because there are all these different habitat things that are going on, all these like wide open prairies, you have mammals and rabbits. And there's a Iberian lynx that apparently is either right on the verge of being an endangered species or is an endangered species. It's very rare. That lives in these areas because rabbits are constantly living, eating on all the little things and all the native shrubs and grasses that are in this area. Then you have this endangered eagle that also stays and hangs around because it can eat all of those other little things that are also down the ground. So it's this full ecosystem that is supporting all these local farmers. It's supporting this gigantic industry.
Yeah.
And it's different than what we would do in other forest resource extraction spaces because the forest product comes from and is dependent on a living tree and a healthy ecosystem.
Yeah.
Versus like removing all the trees, coming back, and then replanting. Now that land has to recover for who knows how long, and you destroy the ecosystem. In this place, in these situations, they are keeping the ecosystem intact and using it with multiple different things that we now today colloquially call diversity.
Right.
And the ecosystem stays in balance.
I feel like this is a great, this should just be the template for any like natural resource industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let nature dictate how you go about harvesting this stuff.
Yeah. And you can manage it. You just can't manage it and force it to something that it doesn't already want to do.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, there's a term for this. We call it agroforestry.
Oh, sure.
So it's the idea that you are planting things and trees to grow in certain ways in certain places for multiple different objectives. And it goes from like certain trees that give a certain thing down to the smaller trees that grow in shady conditions, down to shrubs and herbs that you then get livestock to eat. You run them over a very large, vast space. So you're never having too much concentration in one area.
Yeah.
Recovery and rehabilitation is happening all the time, just like in any normal ecosystem. And you're exactly right. Nature is dictating what works best. And then we're just moving the dial a little bit here and there to make it work efficiently for us.
Here's my question. Why? I'm like, very, it's almost like it's surprising that this is the way it's done.
Yeah.
It's very enheartening, you know, heartening.
Yeah. One of the two.
It makes me happy.
I think heartening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, what's the catch?
Yeah, right?
Like, why isn't it a huge destructive factory farm industry?
Mm-hmm. It's because the trees do not grow that fast.
Okay.
And if you can manage for all these things, then you can wait the 9 to 12 years, harvest these trees, sell the cork, and do this on a long rotation. It's also been very traditional for a very long time. So before, like, industrial capitalism really got its hold on things. Yeah. This was already a sustainable working practice. It's a native tree, but you can't grow bark any faster than you can grow bark.
Yeah.
So they have to wait this X amount of time. And in order to just use the land that's being just, you know, kind of waited on to wait for these trees to get big enough and the bark to regrow, they would just run their livestock on it. And then they would do that and just keep everything just the way it was because it was working just fine. The trees are growing just fast enough, and you have just enough of them over this big, wide space that you can make it sustainable. So yeah. It's really like low intensity over a very large space. Whereas what capitalism is all about is very high intensity on the smallest space.
And I want to say, like, that's such a beautiful template, right? Yeah. And like, oh, I wish we did that here, but there's just absolutely no fucking chance that that would play in America en masse. You know, like, I'm sure there are communities that, like, we have sustainable practices for harvesting this plant. Mm-hmm. They put some thought into it, but that has to be the minority.
Yeah. And I think it also needs to come down to a local market. A lot of the big thing with this catch is that it's the people who are eating and producing these goods are right there.
Yeah.
We were talking a couple weeks ago with Shannon of the Lumber Update.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it's come out yet, so everyone will hear it. We'll post about it when it does. But he was talking about going over to Europe, to Austria, and was saying, yeah, they cut down the trees. The people that do all the work and all the things are right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one small community that's serving itself. You saw the tree that got cut down. 10 minutes later, you see the boards that the guy's selling over here.
Not in the way that, like, if anywhere in the United States, if you take a bite of corn, it's coming from, like, this one farm in Ohio.
Yeah, right, or wherever.
Yeah.
So this would be the case of saying, great, let's do that, but instead of buying my eggs at the multinational chain that I get my eggs from, I will go to the local market in my community and get eggs from the farm that has chickens that lay eggs that also grow all these other things.
I also wonder what that says about the Portuguese and Spanish people, you know, like in terms of like their culture at large, if they just value like more handmade, more artisanal.
Right?
I mean, that can certainly be said about food in Europe in general.
Yeah.
Maybe except the UK. Sorry, everyone. Wow. Where, like, you know, food is named after the cities where it was made, you know?
Oh, yes, I see. Yeah. And that, I think you're right. Now, I don't know, and I don't want to necessarily romanticize, you know, this European ideal of pastoralism, because there are still giant cities that are filled with all these different things.
Sure.
So
I'm speaking in generalities, Casey.
Yes, I know, and I'm just calling out those generalities is all.
Yeah,
because it can be done. The United States is so far away from that model. When we are even talking about kind of getting towards that model, we're just like, oh my God, they're doing it. It's beautiful. So I think that they're, you know, if we were talking to someone from a city in Spain, they'd be like, no, dude, this place is so messed up. But then there's other things that they're just way more progressive about, which is funny to say is progressive because it's actually a traditional way of managing the land that goes back thousands of years. Right? You know? Farmers markets are a great example of this kind of thing happening. Yeah. CSA, community supported agriculture. Exactly. Yeah. So this is the model is there and we can do it, but you need to, it needs to be supported. It's a little bit more expensive because it's far more intensive. These are literally 12,000 people every year going out into these forests and removing the oak or the removing the bark off of these trees by hand. This is not a machine process. A machine would kill all of the trees.
Yeah.
The trees are not perfectly straight columns. So everything has to be done by people. That, I think, is the big thing that we have gotten away from, where we're not having people go out and do these things. The farm jobs kind of suck if all you're doing is just walking through literally miles and miles of soybean and corn farms. That is not going to be a very enjoyable job. Big, huge farms of only one thing may not be an enjoyable job. But if you're on a farm, it's a big farm, but you have like 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 different kinds of things growing at any one given point in time, the diversity at least makes it a little more interesting, maybe?
Yeah. I think it's hard to convince Americans to buy like CSA stuff or farmers market produce because in a culture that puts such a high value literally on money.
Yes, or like, funny enough, a high value on low value.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's only 79 cents? Yeah, yes, I'll take them.
As opposed to the corn over there, that's $1.30, but it was grown with care and like on a small farm and it was hand delivered to the stall.
Yes, and multiple people got paid from that $1.30. Yeah. Not just, you know, one machine and one farmer or something.
So many people would rather have the corn that's 30 cents cheaper because, you know, well that also goes, I mean, like you're not getting paid enough to, not everybody is paid enough from their fucking full-time job to be able to support the CSA.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing, Alex, which I think is like so key to this whole conversation, is like how complicated it gets so quickly.
It's true.
In the United States, like we've gone so far down a certain route that it's hard to come back. So when we look at this, like we said, we see it and we're just like,
You turn around to look at the path and there's immediately a bend in it. And you're like, well, I don't even know where we came from.
Right. But I think what we can say pretty emphatically is this is a model that we can use and should be used and is mostly used in places where the land is very arid and you can't grow a lot of stuff. So they have to have these certain things in place. Yeah. A lot of the kind of warm tropical areas are really focused on agroforestry. And it is a multiple use strategy, but it just does not fit capitalism. Like that's the really big thing is that we have designed everything to fit our capitalist model, which is maximize and minimize on these two different sides. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is kind of like, why don't we just like not maximize anything so that everything is kind of running at a sustainable rate?
Balance.
Wow. All about balance.
What a concept, Casey.
What a concept. Oh. So if we can do it here, man, what a dream that would be.
That would be amazing, Casey. I mean, you have to have hope, right? And everything is a rubber band. If we go too far in one direction, the rubber band will snap. Mm-hmm. It'll either snap or rubber band back in the other direction.
Yeah, right.
You know, even the mightiest empires fall.
True.
We're on our way.
We're on our way. Fingers crossed.
So hopeful.
Yeah. Well, and see, in that regard, a big counterpoint would be, is this system of these kind of big, they're not even really estates. Some of them are like locally owned by like a group or a co-op or they're just public land that are managed specifically.
Interesting.
You also can find that someone could say, well, how many people will that support? It's in balance, but we have a city of 2 million people over here that need food. You cannot grow enough food to support this number of people on this system. So there's this other, that is the pendulum swing. Right?
Yeah. I mean, everything is more complicated than it seems. Every problem has more like nuance than it seems. Every solution has more caveats than it seems.
Right.
There's almost no point in anything.
Well said, Alex.
That was our discussion of the cork oak. We got to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to review this wonderful tree. But we got to do so after some ads. Thank you for sitting through them. We love you. We'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Wow, sorry, Casey.
Is everyone okay? I just, like, my eyebrows just got singed. Jeez.
It's me trying to reverse engineer some energy. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the cork oak. Casey.
Alex.
It is time to give a review to this tree.
Oh, I would love to.
I'm quite excited for this. Here's how it works. We're going to get some final thoughts on the cork oak. Likes, dislikes. And then we're going to give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. This is your first time listening. That's how we do things over here at Completely Arbitrary.
That's how we do it.
After these rich discussions of these complicated ideas, it all comes down to a golden cone score.
Everything just boils down to golden cones, baby.
It is all just arbitrary.
It's just capitalism here.
Casey, as our resident expert, you know what? You might be an expert, but more and more lately, I have felt capable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a big discussion we should have.
I'm not an expert,
not even close. I mean, compared to you, who have a master's degree and a couple of bachelors, and I think an honorary Harvard law.
Yeah,
degree.
Yeah, I do. I thank you, Alex. I'm like glad Shaq. You know this.
It's my dream to get an honorary law degree from Harvard, and Shaq gives it to me.
That would be a dream.
I have felt more and more capable, and like I know more about trees than being like the dumb guy on the podcast.
Wow,
which was my old character.
You saw everyone those quotes. He had quotes around that.
Season one, Alex. Wow. You know, we're in season six.
That is true.
Characters change a lot over time.
That's very accurate.
Anyhow, as a resident expert, saying this, having said all that, we'll begin with you.
Maybe now start saying as one of the resident experts.
Ah, can I be an honorary? I've called myself an honorary arborist.
Let me go call Shaq. Yeah, we can get this done.
If anything, I'm an honorary dendrologist.
Yes,
not
correct.
An arborist.
Yes, all right. I'll take that. Yeah.
Casey, what's your thoughts? Your score.
My thoughts are, so to get kind of back to this, I know that you may not be able to apply this model of the dehesas and montados to everywhere.
Yeah.
But we could probably amp up how much we do use that in the United States and Canada for certain by a significant degree.
Yeah.
And I think we should. So it's at least a model worth investigating and saying, okay, how can we modify this to our area?
All it takes is a single step in the right direction and you're on your way.
And certainly Central California is so perfect for this. It's so perfect. It's literally the same thing with different species of oak trees.
Yeah.
Like I cannot, like I almost like have to just spit these words out. I'm so emphatic about this. Like you can literally do a one-to-one with almost every different species from there to there.
Cool.
Anyway, I think the cork oaks are incredible trees. Mm. The very first one I saw was on Oregon State campus and it blew my mind when I was like, wait, what? This is where cork comes from. And whenever I learn about the product, rather the tree that we get a very common product from, like cork. Oh yeah, cork, duh. What does it come from? And everyone's like, I don't know. Like cinnamon is another one. Everyone's like, well, where does cinnamon come from? You're like, totally. Oh, it must be this. Yeah, it's just the bark of a tree.
Yeah.
So this is the bark of a tree. It is a sustainable practice. These trees will not be cut down. They are not being killed. They are done properly by professionals, and it's supporting this really cool model of how we could do life, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really unique, and I think the tree itself as the kind of pillar that is holding this whole thing up is really beautiful.
Yeah.
The tree itself is gorgeous. You should go find them and touch their bark any chance you get. It is a 10 out of 10 golden cones of honor for the bark. Alex just got stunned because he thought I was going to go all the way up to 10 out of 10.
Wow, for the bark. Okay.
Yeah, for the bark specifically.
Sure.
The rest of the tree is being planted more and more around here in the Great Pacific Northwest because, again, Sisters Nursery is saying, hey, we need to get some climate adapted species that are evergreen, because why are we planting deciduous trees in Oregon where we tend to get all of our rain when the leaves aren't there? So how are they really providing us rainwater benefits, you know?
Interesting.
So it's kind of this fun idea where if we have more evergreen species, then we can have better services, and we also have more dense shade, and they don't care a lick about the drought. They're totally fine with
that. Yeah, yeah.
So they're just like these really, really great trees. They kind of grow funny, though. They don't have around here this beautiful form that you see in their native habitat. They just kind of get a little straggly and kind of gangly and leggy. They really don't have a beautiful form. They can have a beautiful form, and I'm waiting for them to get there. So I'm going to give this tree I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Oh, wow.
7.505. Just a little bit higher than 7.5. So it rounds up at the end of the day.
Okay, it doesn't, but that's fine.
Wow, thanks, Alex. The 5 goes to a 1, the 1 now goes to a 5. Okay, you're right, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, so 7.505, because I think it is far more, it's a tree that I think has a lot of symbolism as to, hey, you could kind of do it like this. I know we can't harvest I know we can't harvest cork from our native trees over here, but at least we can use them to support an ecosystem and make a living and a life off of that. I think that's really cool. Yeah. I think the trees themselves are beautiful in their native habitat. Everywhere else that they're planted, and they're underplanted, you should plant more if they are good for your area.
A rare one.
They have a little bit to be desired, at least so far, with our horticulture variety. I think we can really make them look way better.
Cool.
I don't know how, I don't know when, but it's not my job. I'm not a nursery man. Yeah,
someone else take care of it.
Yeah, come on. Anyway.
Did you say nurseryman?
Yeah, I was making a rhyme. I don't know where, I don't know when, but I am not a nursery man. So I should have said men, nurserymen.
You can, it's a near rhyme.
Yeah.
7.5.05 from Casey Clapp.
No. Yes. Yes. You're right. I feel like I just got hit by something. Throwing a cone at me real fast. Casey, shut up.
The cork oak. I also remember finding out early on in the podcast that the thing we call cork, that we so lovingly pin our evidence for the serial killer.
Yep.
That we use in our sandals.
Correct.
That we use in our floaty keychains so you don't lose your keys while you're fishing. That people use to stop wine from spoiling is from a tree? Same thing with cinnamon. You're right. That is the other one that I was like, oh my God, that's so like, it's so hilariously and adorably simplistic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, oh, it's just cork.
You just don't think about where it comes from.
Yeah. And it's right there. It's on the tree. It grows on a tree. I mean, it's like it's out of a Dr. Seuss book or something.
It totally
is. We need some of this. Or let's take it off the tree.
Like Willy Wonka, where you just like go and pluck something off of a tree
totally.
And it is that thing. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. It's almost like a fruit or something. Like it can be used right away. Just grab it and you're good to go. This whole farming practice, what were they called? These lands in Portugal?
Dehesa and Montado.
Okay. I think these are just beautiful templates for what we could be doing more of all across the world. I think the cork being from the cork is so hilariously simplistic. It's just really endearing. Oh boy. Yeah, seeing the flayed man look with like, it's almost like pushing up your sweater sleeves, you know, and you just got your bare arms.
Oh my God. It is.
It's so funny.
And they're like, we didn't know this, but they're like bright red orange.
Yes.
Like that you look at it and you're like, oh my God, like what is the matter with those trees?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It looks like a cross section in like an anatomy book or something.
Yes, yeah, totally. It's exactly it.
I really admire this tree, and I admire what it gives us. I love a tree that gives back, and I admire the farmers in Spain and Portugal that are like honoring that and taking care of these trees. And yeah, you have a huge fucking industry, but it's done in a way like that seems pretty fucking responsible and kind to the earth.
Yeah.
Gosh, Casey. It's in my heart. I give it a 9.0.
Wow, Alex, that's beautiful.
I actually thought you were going higher.
You did?
I did, yeah. When you give the bark a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, the bark is really good. Okay, maybe I should go up to, maybe I'll change it to 7.9.
7.9?
Yeah, I'm going to change it to 7.9.
Okay.
It's not, I mean, it's a fine tree. It's a fine tree. It is. It's a fine tree. I just can't, like, I love to see it. But there are so many other trees. I just, the majesty of it doesn't quite get me there.
I'm kind of giving it my score in like its Mediterranean proper range.
Yes, okay, I see. Yeah, yeah. Which I have done a few times. I guess that I have experience with this tree kind of shapes that tree.
Sure, yeah. That was our review of the Cork Oak. What a lovely time.
A lovely time.
It is now time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. Casey, this week's question comes from longtime fan, I will say host favorite, Angie Smith.
Oh, hey, Angie.
Angie is one of our most hardcore fans. Angie shows up to every single live stream.
That's right.
Hi, Angie.
Bonjour.
Angie asks, what's your favorite place to eat in Portland?
Whoa!
Like your special treat place.
Yeah, so honestly, I think you've had a similar question like this. I don't know if we covered it on Mainline.
Oh, is it too similar?
No, okay. Because these things change all the time.
Sure.
I need you to go first.
I chose this because it's not strictly tree related, but
it's Iberian pork related.
Yes. I love going to the porqueria. It is adjacent, at least. We talk about food a lot on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and normally this would be an episode that, well, it is somewhat related to, again, stay to the end.
Oh, is there something happening at the end of this podcast?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Exciting. A little 11th hour tease.
Well, I teased it already, the very beginning.
When?
The very beginning. I said, if you stay to the end.
I did surprise. Not hear this.
Wow.
I tuned you out.
Oh my God. Thanks, Alex.
My favorite. Okay. Special treat place.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. What I was going to say is this is a little bit of a food eating related drinking thing.
Yeah.
It's also related to, if we were smarter, we would have done this during one of our food related things.
Sure.
But we put this one in because it was in my heart.
Listen, we don't have an oversight committee.
No.
That's Casey and I.
We're
already pretty busy.
We just switched chairs.
Okay, so if I have like a special treat place in Portland, it's probably going to be an expensive pizza. That expensive pizza is coming from Demos.
Demos Pizza.
Demos a pizza is, that's a pizza because it's New Haven, Connecticut style.
Just so funny. They
call it a pizza over there.
Okay.
It's my favorite pizza in Portland. I think it is almost a perfect 10 out of 10. Mm. I don't know what I would change.
Yeah.
It's only missed once for me out of the, I don't know, couple dozen times I've had it.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling like dropping a little dough on something that I know is going to be, like really consistent, I'm going Eam.
Yeah.
Eam is like, I've talked about before. Eam is like a fast food chain in the sense that it's so aggressively consistent.
Huh.
You know exactly what you're going to get.
Interesting.
Anytime you go, I've never had any like inconsistency there. That's a big thing for me for restaurants.
It is huge. Yeah.
When you go time and time again, you expect it to be as good as the last time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And Eam doesn't change their menu. They're not innovating over there, but it is so good and so solid.
Yeah. Now they did already innovate.
Yes, this like is, the yeah. well, yeah, they it's like it a worked. Fusion place. Yeah. I think it's a collaboration between a Thai restaurant and a Southern barbecue joint.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And it is so good, and it is just like exactly what it is each and every time. It is spendy.
Yeah,
I'll drop.
But it's so good.
I don't want to say. It is very good. And then let's see. Those might be like my two big go tos if I'm really treating myself.
Yeah. I think that's probably it.
Do you have anything in your purview case?
Honestly, I don't. Sorry.
You don't have a special treat place?
I don't. I don't really. I the only thing I can say is after a long frisbee tournament, yeah. I tend to get sushi. I like sushi.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I also don't like spending a whole lot of money on sushi.
Yeah.
So if I do, I would probably go find a place that has better, more high quality, high class sushi.
Yeah.
And I would go eat that.
Okay.
And that's one of my favorite things.
Let me say this. Let me ask this.
Please.
I know that you are a burrito boy.
Yes.
And as somebody like me who suffers greatly from gastrointestinal issues, mm-hmm. a burrito is pretty much a
non-starter.
Yeah. It doesn't happen. It can't happen. Although it did happen recently.
Nice. Well done.
Thank you. What is your go-to burrito in Portland?
Wow.
We're talking the place, the meat, ooh. And the fillings. Like, what do you have in it?
Well, I just recently had one of my favorite breakfast burritos again for the first time in a very long time, which is from, I think it's called La Casita, which is a little food cart under a overhang on a parking garage next to PSU.
So you know it's going to be good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I like them. They're very sweet people, and they make a big, big burrito.
Hell yeah.
I used to go to La another Casita. Food cart on Foster and 52nd Avenue, but I think it changed its name. It used to be called El Local, and it would be a habanero burrito, which ooh. Was not as hot, except for one time, and that was a horrible experience.
Oh, jeez.
We won't go into the details.
Speaking of gastrointestinal issues.
Yeah. But they just made huge, big burritos, and I would always get a carnitas. I love carnitas. I think it's so good.
So good.
But shoot. I don't really have a place. I do love Eam. I think Eam's fantastic.
Yeah.
I really like that. But the
we've been there together.
We have. He was very good, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Alex, I don't know.
That's okay. You've answered it plenty.
All right, because I just
your go-to burritos is what was I was pitching that to you as your
okay, thank
as your
you.
Answer.
I really appreciate that. I tend to suck at getting good things. Like I'm not a foodie. So like you and other people I've met, they'll like go try specific restaurants,
yeah.
just to see what it's like. And I would love to do that. I just don't. I don't know why.
It is. I mean, it's. I think if you don't have. You like food.
Yeah, I do.
But you're not like crazy about it in the way that some like food enthusiasts are.
Correct.
And it's a hard thing when you're not in that mindset to commit a bunch of money to.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's like, oh, geez, one meal is that much.
Yeah, right.
But it's you know, as I've said before, it's more than about the food. It's about the experience. It's about the going somewhere and feeling like you're being like you're experiencing something that is like special. It's art, Casey.
Yes,
the chef is the artist. You're eating their art. It's
very
like,
true.
It's a wonderful thing.
I will say though, I do like a pub quite near where I live called the Pocket Pub.
Hey,
and they make spectacular pizzas.
Wonderful.
Everything on their menu is delicious. So I would recommend that.
Thank you so much, Angie. I could go on.
We can go on. We'll have a whole other episode about it. We'll just talk about food.
I would love to. Living in Portland is great for that.
It really is.
If you have a question for us, join up on the Patreon. It's the best way to support this podcast. Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod, ArbitraryPod. There's a bunch of different tiers for a bunch of different support levels, and you get rewards every month, including the crown jewel of the Patreon, the Cone of the Month Club.
The Cone of the Month Club.
That's right. You sign up for that, you get bonus episodes. You get access to a monthly coupon for merch. You also get a sticker every single month sent to you in your mailbox, and it is illustrated by an independent artist of a conifer cone.
That's right.
We've gone through 33 different species so far, Casey.
That's right. And we just sent out last month's, which is the Woolamai pine.
That's right.
And I guess I say last month's, September's.
Yeah.
October's we've just ordered. So there's so many lucky people that are going to get a ghost pine here in a couple weeks.
I'm excited for that one.
It's going to be great. And then this month, what are we going to have now?
Cryptomeria.
Oh, the Sugi.
That's right.
How exciting. I love the Sugi.
So go to patreon.com if you want to support this podcast. Look for Completely Arbitrary or arbitrarypod.com. Go peruse that website. We spent a lot of time on it, and there's a lot of cool stuff on
there. Yeah, we sure did. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
It is time for the reveal.
There is a reveal. I'm very excited. This is the whole reason I decided to do the stream.
Wow.
I wanted to pop the cork because we have celebrations to celebrate.
Yeah.
I can finally announce to the whole world that I am actually going to make a tree identification book. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. There's everyone here. Woo! The producers, all my friends, all my family. You guys are the best. I'm very excited, Alex. And we just finalized I just signed the papers.
That's right.
With Mountaineers Publishing just yesterday.
Wow.
So it is very exciting. And for those of you who don't know, it's going to be a guide to how to identify trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the local common trees in the Pacific Northwest. It's going to be the ones that you will find if you walk out your front door, you go down your street, you're at your park. What trees are you going to see?
Yeah.
What are going to be there? Not the trees that you would necessarily find out in the wild woodlands. Not the trees you're going to find in natural areas, unless they're invasive trees, which also grow in the cities.
It's a focus on urban forests.
Exactly. So the whole scheme is to be a an accessible user's guide to how to identify trees.
Yeah.
And it's going to be from start to finish how to do it, and then it's going to cover all these different species, closely related species, and give you almost literally anything you could ever want in terms of what is that tree. The idea is you literally walk out your door, you see a tree, you pull this book out, 99% of the time it's going to tell you the tree that's in
Hell
front
yeah.
of you or help you get there.
Casey, I have I have seen this journey of yours from your first, maybe not your first, but early on saying, I want to write a tree ID book.
Yeah.
I want to write a tree ID book. I want to write a tree ID book. And I went, yeah, right. You never will.
Give me a nookie and kick me out the door.
I've never said that to you. I've always been encouraging.
He has been.
And then you know, you found a publisher and you started working mm-hmm. on it. And it's been so exciting to see you on this journey.
Thanks, Alex.
And in a way, it's kind of just beginning. There's all these like refreshers, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I'm stoked to see this book in the wild. I hope I get a signed copy.
You will. You'll get a signed copy.
And I'm really excited for my 20%.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Damn. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
This is unfair. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.